Welcome to the world of Culture Pop with Steve Mason and Sue Kalinske. Culture,
comedy, movies, TV, tech, authors, trends,
pop.
This is the Culture Pop Podcast.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Culture Pop Podcast. I'm Steve Mason along with Sue Kalinske. Sue, it feels like I haven't talked to you in a really long time.
Because you haven't.
Oh, that's right. You're absolutely correct. We haven't talked in a while. We are really excited today because Sue and I are both huge dog people. And we've got coming on today an expert in dog cognition, Dr. Brian Hare. Now, first of all, Sue, your history as a dog owner. Who was your first dog?
My first dog was Peyote Button.
That was an actual given name, Peyote Button?
Yes. It was kind of a joke to my parents who had no idea what that meant. So sometimes the dog would get out and my mother would yell out the back door, Peyote Button, Peyote Button. She had no idea what she was saying. Like she was selling it to the neighborhood.
And then what dogs do you have now? You have one or two dogs?
I have one dog now, unfortunately. Tucker, who's he's kind of a Chihuahua. They call him a deer head Chihuahua. He's probably a terrier Chihuahua mix.
Yeah. I've got two. I've got Sophie, who is a beagle. She's a purebred beagle. I got her accidentally from a puppy mill. I apologize. It was supposed to be a pound dog. It was supposed to be a rescue. It turned out to be a puppy mill dog, but fell in love with her right away. And then Fredo is a terrier shelter mix, who is the sweetest little guy in the world.
They are sweet, both of them.
Yeah, they are. They're good kids. I'm excited about this, and I'm going to ask some stupid questions here. Like, I always want to know, like, what's my dog thinking?
Mm-hmm.
What's he thinking? What's she thinking? And we're going to talk to a guy who has some sense of that. Our guest is the founder of the Duke Canine Cognition Center and the author of the bestseller, The Genius of Dogs. His new book is Survival of the Friendliest. Dr. Brian Hare joins us. Dr. Hare, thanks so much for doing this.
It's a joy to be with you.
So I guess the first question is, how did you develop this interest in dog cognition?
Well, I'm like a lot of people. I was in part raised by a Labrador Retriever who was my best friend growing up, and you can't help but wonder what goes on in their minds, I guess.
What was your first discovery as a dog researcher?
Well, it's a funny story. I discovered something that most dog lovers know already, which is that dogs are really good at reading our gestures, like our pointing cues and things like this. That's a really important ability as kids develop.
Let's talk about domestication. Like how did wolves turn into dogs?
15 to 25,000 years ago, wolves chose humans and began self-domesticating themselves. And that's before the first plant was ever planted by a human. So before agriculture.
You know, being a dog owner and lover pretty much my whole life, the one thing that I'm so curious about is how much do dogs know? Like, I rescued a dog from a shelter, and the dog's behavior, he was so good in the shelter, right? Kind of like, it gave me the feeling that maybe he knew that if he didn't act that way, maybe he wasn't going home with somebody. And then as soon as we got him home, he barked incessantly. There was not a peep out of him in the shelter. What do they know? I'm just so baffled by what their thought process is, if they have one.
Well, a couple of things we've learned is that dogs actually have some adaptations. They've evolved to hijack our social bonding pathway, and they do that in a couple of really interesting ways that we're not consciously aware of. So the first thing they do is they can create an increase in a hormone in our bodies called oxytocin that is involved in human parents bonding with their newborn infants. When you make eye contact with your dog or you scratch and hug it, it creates oxytocin in you and the dog, and you guys feel a physiological response to that interaction, and it's what is the chemistry of our bond. The other thing is that they have evolved a muscle in their eye that they can use, they can pull back and show us more of their eye. And that actually helps them elicit more of this hormone that makes us fall in love with them.
So you wrote in your book about chimpanzees, you wrote about foxes, you wrote about wolves. And the surprising thing was you made it sound like, I think I've got this right, the dogs are smarter than chimpanzees?
That's right. It is surprising, but as smart as chimpanzees are, they cannot understand cooperative types of communication. So if you're trying to help them by gesturing to them, to show them where something is that they might be interested in, they just don't get it. And of course, our dogs do that every day. It's totally unremarkable, but it ends up it's a type of genius.
I always wonder what a dog thinks like who do they think I am? I'm like, you know what I mean? It's like I'm not a dog. Like what do they, who do they think we are?
Oh, well, that is,
By the way, we have many stupid dog questions, Dr. Hare.
Oh no, that, you know what? I have a lot of patience for that because I'm a dog lover too. And I wonder about those things too. So I totally get it. As a scientist, sometimes I can't answer, but as a dog lover, I can say what you would say, which is, you know, I think they know that we're, not exactly like them, but, we're kind of a group and a social pack and we like each other. But I think it's more, they think they might be people.
I have a dog that I swear she believes she is a person. She doesn't like other dogs. She only likes other people. I think she believes that she is a person. Now, I've always wondered some dumb things about my dogs. Like, for example, do they understand what a mirror is?
Okay, so no, they don't. That's the short answer. They might be able to use a mirror to find something, but when they look in the mirror, there's no evidence that they know that that is their own reflection.
Wow!
Like they wonder whether they're fat or not.
They don't have that stress, too. They don't have to worry about those kinds of things. Isn't that nice?
Can dogs see color?
Yes. We have three types of cells in our eyes to see color, and they have two. So they kind of have two-thirds of the color vision that we do is one way to think about it.
So in your book, you said that there's no experimental evidence that a dog feels guilt. And I had kind of a crazy experience. I had two dogs at the time, and I'm in my house on the phone, and my dogs were outside, and all of a sudden, I hear shrieking, and I come outside, and apparently, they got into a fight over a food toy, and one of my dogs bit a piece of the other dog's ear off, and ironically, it was after the whole Tyson thing, which was kind of funny. I'm yelling at the dog, and the dog who bit the dog's ear, after like a couple of minutes, she went over and started kissing him and licking the wound. So what is that about?
Okay. So dogs do reconcile after fights. They inherited that from wolves. Many mammals reconcile after conflicts. Chimpanzees, bonobos, if they get in a big fight, they will go and hug and make up. And if they do, they're less likely to get into another fight. And the same for wolves. Wolves make up after fight. And actually, dogs actually don't make up as much as wolves do after fights. So that's a little fun material to play with. They're a little bit more miserly with their making up. But I'm sure that's what was going on in that case you described.
So how good is a dog's memory? Do they remember everything? I had a dog that a shelter mix terrier. I wondered what his background was. Does he remember what happened before he was my dog?
So I think where I feel really confident that dogs are, have really good memory is when they see something or they hear something or they smell something that they have experienced before, they can recognize that thing that they have experienced before. I think where they may not be as much like us is when it comes to recalling. So like imagining the past or imagining the future. I think that type of memory they have a little bit, but not like the same that we have.
Do they have a sense of time? Because, you know, when I walk, and a lot of people have this experience, you walk outside to pull something out of your car and you walk back in a minute later and it's like you've been gone for days.
They're just happy to see you.
Do they understand what time is?
You know, that time you were away seemed like forever to them. So they're so happy to see you. I think your dog must really love you.
Yes.
I guess that's the non-genius part of them.
Yeah, exactly. No, they do have a sense of time, but not to the degree that we do. I think that they have a sense of time in terms of, you know, their bodies know when to be hungry or when to sleep and, you know, the times for those kinds of things. And, you know, they might feel like, now's the time we usually go on a walk. But, you know, this has been a really long answer to a question or, this is really a boring lecture, et cetera. I don't think they don't have that sense.
Are they sometimes happy and sometimes depressed?
Oh, definitely. Dogs have emotions, and they have they can have moods where they're happy or sad. And sure, I think, you know, when a dog is left by itself, when it's really bonded and cares about somebody, I think that that's not a very happy thing for a dog. And I think that, you know, when they're doing something they enjoy, like playing fetch or eating good food, I think they're very happy.
What is it about dogs that, in my experience, that they seem to gravitate to people that hate dogs?
That hate dogs? I get the opposite. I get that they are gravitate towards people that love dogs.
No. Like, there are times where someone will be at my house and they're not dog people, and my dog will go right over to them. And I don't know if it's like, I obviously don't think they're, I'd like to believe that they're doing it just to screw with the person. But what is it? I mean, have you experienced that?
There is very nice evidence that dogs are attracted to strange people. Other animals, in fact, wolves that dogs evolved from, are not, they actually avoid strangers and they avoid strange people. Even if they were raised by humans, they don't like to be around people they don't know. And dogs, because of domestication, actually are attracted to new people. They like to be around new people. So that's probably part of that response that you're seeing.
So in your book, Survival of the Friendliest, which is your latest book, you argue kind of against survival of the fittest. How does being friendly help a species survive?
Well, dogs are exhibit A of survival of the friendliest. Dogs evolved because they became friendlier than the wolves they evolved from. They became attracted to people. They wanted to interact and be near humans. A fear of humans was replaced with a desire to want to be near us and use resources that we had that they didn't have otherwise. So I think they're exhibit A of friendliness being a winning strategy in life. Example are bonobos. Bonobos are a close relative of ours. We share with they're equally related to us as chimpanzees. And it ends up that bonobos are much friendlier than chimpanzees. There's no alpha males in bonobo land where they live. But bonobo males actually have more offspring than chimpanzee males, even the most successful alpha chimpanzee. So friendliness wins in nature and in life.
What makes a dog be kind of standoffish? Like, I know there are certain breeds that, like, notoriously, the dogs, like Shiba Inus aren't the most friendly dogs. I wouldn't say they're snooty, but, you know, maybe they're shy. What determines that?
Oh, that's a great question. So it can be both how the dog was reared and also its breeding and training. But you brought up the Shiba Inu, and that's not probably a random observation, because there are 8 breeds that are more wolf-like genetically. And those breeds, like Chow Chows and Huskies and Shiba Inus, Dingoes, New Guinea Singing Dogs, and Shar Peis, a few others, they tend to not be as attracted to strangers and a little bit more reticent and reserved around people they don't know.
Can dogs, now I read somewhere in your book that dogs can recognize facial expressions and subtle facial expressions. How, explain that, and how do they do it?
Well, I mean, there are, I haven't done the studies myself, but people have done studies to look at whether dogs understand if you're making a happy expression, an angry expression, and they're able to show that they can make choices and choose whether or not they should approach somebody who's making a happy face or a sad face or an angry face. And they can discriminate where to approach based just on the what the face looks like. I think even more than that, though, and I think less subtle, is dogs are able to discriminate voice, pitch, and tone, and volume, and they're very sensitive to, you know, baby ease and cute little, oh, you're so wonderful, or, you know, shouty voices or whatever.
Yeah. How do you talk to your dog, Dr. Hare? What's your voice?
Just like everybody else. You're so cute. You're so cute. Or, you know, yeah, the boy, good job. You know, all the typical stuff.
I always wonder, like, how much like a dog can actually see of things. Cause I've had experiences where, and I'm going to name drop, but an old boyfriend of mine was really good friends with Stephen Wright. And Stephen Wright used to come to our house a lot. And whenever he'd come to our house, he would have a baseball cap on, and he had, you know, big, you know, full hair. So his hair was long and stuck out of his hat. And whenever my dog would see him, my dog went nuts. I had to put my dog in another room because the dog would just bark and growl. What do they actually see? Or is it more of a smelling sense?
Yeah, they are very sensitive to olfactory information that we can't detect. And, you know, why sometimes dogs have a negative reaction to a certain person, it's really hard to know on a case-by-case basis. But in general, larger people, people who, may have a deeper voice, people who may smell a way that they haven't smelled before, somebody who may behave in a way that is not intentionally but accidentally threatening, they can have a negative response to all those things.
Yeah.
Right. I have to ask a question in relation to that. What is it with the mailman? Because, you know, my dogs go nuts. And my theory is that they never get mail, so they're just pissed off all the time when the mailman comes.
That's as good as my theory.
But people in uniform, too. I've had dogs, like Steve knew a dog of mine when I was living in New York. My dog Sam was a German Shepherd mix. And when any kind of maintenance person came in, anyone in uniform, my dog went crazy. She hated it.
I mean, you know, maybe we've got some dogs that are, you know, into anarchy or something. They just don't like uniforms and hierarchy or something.
Yeah. So why do we need dogs so much? What does it say about us that we, because I mean, I don't have kids. I've had dogs. Sue doesn't have kids. She's had dogs. What does it say about us that we need our dogs so much?
Well, there's nice evidence that humans are happier, and all of us are happier when we have a nice, rich social network. And I think dogs have become part of that. And, you know, we already talked about how the hormone that makes us feel loving towards other humans, they've hijacked. So we really are having the same sort of physiological response we'd have to another human. And not only that, but of course, they always think we're the greatest when we come home, or, you know, when any, you know, they're always ready to think we're, you know, flawless and with their unconditional love. So I think it's really easy to fall in love with a dog. They're just so much fun.
You know, my dogs, they know they get a cookie at noon. They know they get a chicken strip at 6. They know dinner is at 7:30. How do they keep track of that in their heads? Do they know it, or is it just habit?
They have an app.
Yeah, they have an app.
They have an app. they kind of do have an app. There's a part of your brain called the hypothalamus, and it basically keeps track of time, and it's what, you know, allows us to know when it's time to sleep, or you know, it signals to other parts of the body that, hey, you know, it might be time to start making some digestive fluids. And so if there's a pattern to when they're eating, then the hypothalamus kind of picks up on that and lets the body know, hey, by the way, you're hungry now. And so I'm sure that's part of what's driving that.
Now, do they understand words, or is it the way we say it? Like, I'll say to my dog, you know, do you want to eat? You want to go out. But if I say, do you want to go out to eat? He doesn't have a clue what I'm saying.
It's both. So they understand, they prefer to rely on our gestures and on our tone of voice. That's very easy for them and very intuitive. But, you know, many dogs can learn to associate, you know, a specific word for a specific action. And, you know, that's most pet dogs. But there's some special dogs that through a lot of training have acquired the ability to rapidly learn new words, dozens of words in a single day, having only heard the word being paired with what it refers to one or two times. It's called fast mapping. And dogs are the only other species besides humans that have been demonstrated to do that.
So at the Duke Canine Cognition Center, where do you find dogs to test, to experiment on?
Traditionally, we have had a lot of local pet owners who volunteer to bring their dogs to Duke. And, you know, our joke is we have the cheapest tuition and the highest acceptance rate on campus. and so people bring their dogs in to get a Duke education. It's pretty cheap. And so it's been a lot of fun and a lot of, you know, dog-loving neighbors bringing their dogs in for us to work with. But we've also worked with dogs from the Marine Corps. We've worked with dogs from Canine Companions for Independence in California, which is a wonderful organization, the largest assistance dog organization in the country. We have a 10-year relationship with them, and we also – we now run the Duke Puppy Kindergarten. It's we host puppies actually from Canine Companions for Independence, and we're trying to understand, is there a way to give them a head start so that we can enhance their chances of making it through training when they grow up.
I want to ask you, like, in recent years, there's been a lot of this like designer dog craze, where, you know, a cockapoo or like a Shep retriever, you know, it's like taking
Labradoodle
and, you know, dogs that are hypoallergenic, you know, it's like that fits, you know, the a human's lifestyle. And do you feel that it's a little mad scientist-y to do that?
No, it's more just about marketing. So as an example of the hyperallergenic dogs, there's two scientific studies showing that the dander and the enzyme that create the allergic reaction are released into the environment at the exact same level in dogs that have been claimed to be hyperallergenic and dogs that are not. So there's absolutely no evidence that dogs that people claim are hyperallergenic actually are in any way different.
Has there ever been a time when people have been more reliant on dogs? Like, for example, you know, a lot of people wait to have kids now or choose not to have kids. Their dogs become their kids. I always say, you know, don't get between me and my dogs. Is this sort of a boom industry for you, dog cognition? Because there aren't a lot of people that do this.
Well, you know, when I started 20 years ago, there really wasn't anybody. But thankfully, you know, because dogs have become such an important part of our lives, there's 100 million dogs or more in the world now. And the pet industry in the United States is the eighth largest industry. It's bigger than Hollywood. And so because of that, a lot of people are now getting really excited. A lot of universities are beginning to take dogs and dog psychology pretty seriously because they're becoming such an important part of our lives. And believe it or not, dogs have more jobs than ever. They're dogs that help find endangered animals. They're dogs that now have been trained to detect COVID. They're dogs that help us find bombs or, you know, make sure that baggage is screened in the right way. So they're busy people. And so that makes it really interesting.
Dogs are more employed than most of my friends right now.
Yeah,
that's probably that is a really sad but maybe true statement.
Yes. Well, listen, Dr. Hare, we appreciate this a lot. Two books, Genius of Dogs, which every dog owner should read. And the new book is Survival of the Friendliest. Fascinating stuff. Dr. Brian Hare, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
It was great fun. Thank you for the invitation.
There you have it, Dr. Brian Hare. I learned a lot about my dogs. What about you, Sue?
Yeah, absolutely. Although, you know, my whole thing with my dog is that I think we've created a monster when it comes to treats because my dog expects a treat for everything.
Yep.
You know, I get up. He looks at me like, is this treat worthy? You know, I go out. I come back. I sit down. It's just crazy. But you know what's kind of funny? How, you know, your dog... like when I'm going away, my dog senses, you know, even if they don't see a suitcase, they just know. And now with the pandemic, when I go to get my mask, he knows he's going for a walk.
That makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. My, my dog, well, Sophie, my beagle, is driven completely by food. She loves, if she had to choose between a biscuit and me, she would choose the biscuit every single time.
Absolutely.
She is driven by food. Now, my other dog, Fredo, could kind of take it or leave it. He eats like a gentleman. He eats a little bit in the morning, a little bit in the afternoon. He waits for his treats, but he's not at all driven by food. Food is not his main motivation. So they're very different in that way.
When you say that he eats like a gentleman, does he have like his paw up at like his pinky up?
There's something very sort of dainty and gentlemanly about him.
He's a dignified eater.
He is. He's very careful. He's very particular. He's got a sense of style. He's got class.
He wipes his snout.
Meanwhile, my other dog just puts her face down in the bowl and slops it all up while Fredo's eating like a gentleman. Hmm. So, Sue, you've got a problem with the New York Mets. What is your problem?
That I'm a fan.
I like to solve your
that I'm a fan?
Yeah, I like to solve your baseball questions here.
Yeah, you know, I actually haven't been watching as much baseball as I normally would. I'm just not. But so the other night, Lugo is pitching. And look, they're pitching staff. Everything about the Mets is just a disaster. But so they say that they're only going to let him pitch like 50 pitches.
Right.
So he comes in and for three innings, he's unhittable.
Right.
And he had 39 pitches and they took him out. And it's like, what is wrong with them? Even when somebody is actually doing something good, they take the guy out.
Okay. Now, Sue, I'm going to give you a little lesson here.
All right.
There is science involved in baseball. There is health science in baseball. And they have calculated, every organization has calculated exactly how many pitches any one guy should throw in a game. Pitch counts are for real, and they make a difference, and they keep guys healthy.
I know that. But what I'm saying is that they said they would give him a 50, like I think it was at least 50 pitches, and they gave him 39.
Okay.
So why not let him come out the next inning? Because what happened? He was pitching a no-hitter, and then they lost.
In your world, he was only going to throw 11 more pitches.
Who knows? Maybe he would have gotten another inning out of it.
Yeah, but what would 11 pitches do? You know, your problem is really with Luis Rojas. It is not with me.
Okay, I'll take it up with him.
Take it up with Luis Rojas, the manager of the New York Mets.
All right.
Hey, before we go, I want to thank our sponsor for the Culture Pop podcast. It is the Law Offices of Jacob Imrani. Now, I'm going to fill you in on some stuff here, Sue. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
are you, some people are at the point where they're taking an Uber or a Lyft now. Mm-hmm. Things are returning back to normal to some degree. Jacob has done more Uber and Lyft accident cases than anybody in the country. And there's stuff that you need to know. If you are in an Uber or a Lyft and there's an accident, you, the passenger, are pretty much on your own. Once the cars get to safe areas, what you need to do is take pictures of both cars, not just the car you're in. You got that, Sue?
I got it. I just wrote that down.
Also, ask for the insurance information from both the rideshare driver and the other car involved. Don't rely on the Uber guy to get you the information. And then don't be silent. If the police come, tell them your side of the story and be active. Even if you were in an Uber or a Lyft accident before the pandemic hit, you still have rights, but you got to act fast. Any type of injury. I hope you're ready for this, Sue.
Okay, I am.
Any type of injury. Call Jacob immediately. 844-24-JACOB. That's 844-24-JACOB. 844-24-JACOB. And by the way, I talked to Jacob. He is disappointed with the way that you sing his jingle. He's very upset that you don't play along.
Oh, come on. Do I have to go to classes to learn how to sing along?
If you do, there's something wrong with you. It's such an easy jingle. Ready?
All right.
You ready?
Yeah.
Accident or injury. Call Jacob and Ronnie. Call Jacob. Oh, that was fantastic. That's your best jingle yet.
Well, I had to rise to the occasion. You were really making me feel terrible. And the fact that he weighed in on it.
Yeah. He was very, very upset at your last
performance. I don't want to disappoint him.
All right. So there you have your Culture Pop podcast. We are excited that we got to do this on National Dog Day. Talk to Dr. Brian Hare, a dog cognition expert. Couldn't find a more perfect guest for today. Sue, I will see you next time.
You got it.
And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review to the Culture Pop podcast. All the information, just go to stevemason.com, and we'll see you next time.
Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. We'll see you next week for an all-new episode of Culture Pop.